We'll start with the Baal Shem Tov. There is a letter from the Baal Shem Tov himself in which the Baal Shem Tov is writing to his brother-in-law, whose name was Abgeshen Kitavet, who knew who at a certain point figured out who the Baal Shem Tov was. Originally, Abgeshen Kitavet thought the Baal Shem Tov was a Poshet Yid. At a certain point, the Baal Shem Tov revealed to his brother-in-law who he was while the Baal Shem Tov was still a Nister. And the Baal Shem Tov became a Rebbe when the Baal Shem Tov revealed himself. Rabbi Geshen Kitter was from the first people who supported the Baal Shem Tov as a Gadol B'Yisrael, as a Talmud Chacham, and so forth. So there's a letter which the Baal Shem Tov wrote to Rabbi Geshen Kitter, where he's telling him, I don't know how the Baal Shem Tov knew this, who his neshama was in a previous Gilgal, who the Baal Shem Tov was in an earlier Gilgal. And he tells him the following story, that about 200 years ago, in other words, Baal Shem Tov is saying, about 200 years ago, which from now is 450 years ago, around the times that these are like figure, there was a Yid lived in Anakadish Tzvas. If I'm not mistaken, it doesn't say his name. And he was an Ish Tam V'Yashav Elokim, very pious, good Jew, who just did everything he was supposed to, he was completely sincere, serious, and dedicated to Yiddishkeit. He was a Pashto Yid, simple man. And his avoda was very perfect. Everything he did right. Like he was always from the first people to come to the shul. He was always from the last people to leave the shul. Everything he did in avodas Hashem was done wholly and sincerely and simply. One day, this Yid has a knock on his door. And he asks, who is by the door? And he's told, it's Aliyahu HaNavi Zachar Latev. Aliyahu HaNavi Zachar Latev. So he opened the door. Eliyahu HaNavi comes into his house, and the whole house comes filled with light. And Eliyahu HaNavi tells him that he is a shliach from the Bezdin Shalmailo, because on the day of his bar mitzvah, this is this man, did something extraordinary, very, very special, that it was so special that even the Bezdin Shalmailo doesn't know what it was. So he was sent as a shliach milmailo to come to this Yid and make with him a deal, an offer, that if he will reveal what he did in the day of his bar mitzvah, which the Bamal Yishamal doesn't know, he will teach him kolat erikula, nigle nister, siches dekolim and siches eifes. He'll teach him all the secrets of the Torah, even the language of the trees and the birds. I'll say this, everything the Rishon will teach him. So this Pasha the Yid said to Eliyahu HaNavi Zachar Latev, what I did in the name of my bar mitzvah, I did for the Eibishter alone, and I won't tell you. And if it means that therefore I'm going to lose all of these possibilities, that's how it should be. Kein Yochum, that's what should happen. So Eliyahu HaNavi left. Understandably, now became even a bigger tumult. A Yid should turn out an offer like that for Tznius. So Eliyahu HaNavi went back to the Bezdin Shalmailo, and there was even a bigger shturim, and the maskana was reached. That Eliyahu HaNavi should come to him and teach him kolat erikula without him having to reveal what he did in the day of his bar mitzvah. And that's what happened. Eliyahu HaNavi came to this person and he taught him kolat erikula, and he became, you know, how do you explain it? A tzaddik, a goan, a kodesh, a isha lekim, a get lechaman. But he continued to live his life as he lived it until that point. B'tmimus u'bepashtus. His lifestyle didn't change at all. As a consequence, nobody even realized that this person had become a new man. And he lived his whole life like this, and he died. When it came to the Bezdin Shalmailo, so it's described in other places, that when a tzaddik passes away, it's an incredible simcha. All the neshamas that tzaddikim come to makabel ponim, it's a big simcha. When somebody dies on this side, it's not such a good plan, but over there it's a gvaldika simcha. All the neshamas that tzaddikim come to makabel ponim, and they brought him into the Bezdin Shalmailo, and nobody has a bad word to say about this neshama. It's neshama tachmamish, rein and shein. It couldn't be better. There was one little kategi, one small malachal came to protest. And his protest was, I guess, from a practical perspective, kind of pathetic, kind of weak. But it was a real complaint. How could it be? A yid should be such a big tzaddik, such a big god, such a big kodesh. And never once in his entire life did any Jew ever have anything from it. No tayelas came to Azulas from all of the incredible madreges and yediyas hatera and he said it's for Avedas Hashem. Not one person ever benefits. In other words, it was completely an Avedas Yachid. It was totally personal. The Beis Hamikdash heard this complaint and paskad that he was right. But they made the following determination, that his neshama would have to come back down again. But it wouldn't come down as neshamas are normally born, which means to say, kol adrocha mecheska sakona, neshama comes into this world, it could be good or bad, but his neshama would come down into this world with the matar of revealing a new derech and teira, that will be based on the principle of Yehav Lerecha Kamecha, of Avos Yisrael, which will be Mesal Laderech, which will open up the path of the coming of Mashiach. And this is the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov, and the free of his Gilgal. This is the neshama of the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov himself tells the story in the Geniz Acher Sonis. So of course the story goes that the Baal Shem Tov's parents, whose names were Rebbe Eliezer and Sarah, Rebbe and Sarah, lived in the city of Tlust. Tlust is a city, people know what Tlust is. In some places, the Baal Shem Tov describes that he lived in the city of Akup, as opposed to Tlust. Akup, how can you come from two cities, Tlust and Akup? And the Teretz HaPoshta, Baal Shem Tov came from the city of Tlust. But like all cities in the medieval world, in the world of those years, they were very isolated. In other words, there were huge tracts of forest that separate city and city, and bandits and ganovim and rotzchim had a very easy time maneuvering and attacking travelers and the rest. So every city needed an early warning system. In other words, if there were pirates and attack a town, they knew they couldn't get help from the outside, because by the time they would get communication to the city, there would be nothing to come and save. So they built moats. You know what a moat means? A ditch all around the town, very, very deep, a big, big trench. And they built a bridge that could be raised, a drawbridge. And this gave people an opportunity for an early warning. In other words, if there was people coming into the town, they would have to deal with certain obstacles which would allow the people to mobilize. In Ukrainian, this is called Akup, Akupi. I was in Moscow. There's a street in Moscow, in the center of Moscow, called Sushovsky Val. It's a big circle. It was very strange to me, because the whole city is more or less a grid, you have this round street. And the Russian taxi driver explained to me that this used to be the border of Moscow, the ancient city of Moscow, when Moscow was a country unto itself, and this was the moat. I think Val in Russian means moat. This was the moat. They filled it in, it became a road. Anyway, so the poorest people in town couldn't afford to build homes. So they climbed into the moat, and they lived in effect in shacks. Shacks. You ever see shanty towns? It's unfortunately nothing funny about it, but the Baal Shem Tov was born literally in the hole in the ground. I mean, Nishka Guzman. And this is what the Baal Shem Tov means when he says he comes from the city of Okup. Baal Shem Tov came from the city of Tlust. But his parents were very poor, and as a result, they didn't have a house. They push it. This way you save yourself walls. You don't have to build walls. You don't have to worry about elements. There's not so much wind and so forth. Baal Shem Tov's parents climbed into this moat, and they did whatever they had to do to make some kind of an accommodation. You have to understand, moat is the lowest point in the city, so the water collects there, so you have to build some kind of an elevation. And this is where they lived. Now, in this two sichas, to push it, in one place, the Friedrich Rebbe writes that Baal Shem Tov's parents were incredibly poor, as I just indicated. But in another place, it says Baal Shem Tov's parents were well-to-do. And I have a suspicion that this is not a stira. They were very, very poor, but that's a gehesen compared to everybody else, well-to-do. And they were more than machnis erech. They had no children. They were very old. Very, very old. The Friedrich Rebbe has a reshima, which he copied from a yeshish mi dabra misl, as he schreibt it, who copied it miksaviat kochet al terebe. There's a tzedlach from Friedrich Rebbe, which is copied os ba os from a note that he found by an old dabra misl yid who was ben bais by Matan Rebbe, and he copied it from Matan Rebbe's tzedl. And it said on this piece of paper that the Baal Shem Tov's father was 100, and the Baal Shem Tov's mother was 90 when the Baal Shem Tov was born. And everything about his birth was shalega derech ha'iladim, was totally supernatural. But the beginning of the story is that it was a Shabbos afternoon in Tlust, and a man marches into the town, a yid comes into the town. Coming into a town on a Shabbos morning obviously meant that he was a Mechal Shabbos, and a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, because he had crossed the Tchum and the rest. And in those days, they didn't have tolerance for Freya Yidin, because you were either a Frum Yid or you were a Meshumet, you understand? If you were not keeping the mitzvah, you are meshumad. You you essentially adopted the Goyish way of life, Christianity, and they had absolutely no sensitivity whatsoever to such people. So he comes into town, and right away the whole town is whispering, look at this, a Goy. That's how they refer to these people, a Goy. I mean, you read about the old town Jewish mentality, it was quite brutal. You know, they used to have a little cage near the shul. This is not funny at all. They would put you in this cage, people would come and spit at you. It was part of the discipline. People into this cage, if they, famous story of the Lashem Tov also about somebody who got out of that cage and spent the rest of his life tormenting Jews. And he shows up in town, and right away everyone is saying, Shushkin. And Rebbe Eliezer, Safi Makarevim, he comes over to him in shul and gives him good Shabbos. So now they're shocked at Rebbe Eliezer's making the acquaintance of what in effect was a goy. And the Etzer davening, Rebbe Eliezer had his whole line of guests that went to him to his incredibly wonderful accommodations in the Akup. And he invited this person to come join him for the Shabbos meal. So, the Bashan's father. And he took him home, and all the guests are following behind. And he's favoring him. He's talking to him. He's sitting down next to him. And the more the people are treating him inappropriately, the more Rebbe Eliezer is kind to him. This goes on till the end of Shabbos. After Avdallah, he asks Rebbe Eliezer to come outside, and he tells Rebbe Eliezer that he should know he's Eliyahu HaNavi, Zechar HaTev, Eliyahu HaNavi, and that he was sent to test him. Because a special neshama has to come into this world who is going to light up the world with a new derech and teda based on the principle of Yahavka Lecha Kamoicha, of Avos Yisrael, as the preparation for the coming of Mashiach. And he was sent to test him to see if he's right to be the parent of such a child. And he told him, you passed the test. You can have a child, Taka, who has a special purpose. As I said to you before, when the Baal Shem Tov was born, his parents were 190 respectively, which means to say it was completely supernatural. They had never had children. She had been in Akora. And of course, we know his birthday is Chayelo. Baal Shem Tov revealed, the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe revealed what he heard from his father and so forth, that the birthday of Baal Shem Tov was Chayelo. And the Friedrich Rebbe makes a startling observation. If you count backwards 9 months to the day from Chai Elul, what do you get? Yud Tes Kislev. If you count backwards 9 months from Chai Elul, you get Yud Tes Kislev, which is very interesting. But the Friedrich Rebbe immediately adds that Side Alter Rebbe and Side Baal Shem Tov were born in the Shnas Ibur. Shnas Nachas, when Baal Shem Tov was born, 1698. And Shnas Kahas, 1745. Now, Rebbe was born with both Ibur Yor, which meant that 9 months is not Yutes Kislev, it's Yutes Tevis. And the Friedrich Rebbe says that by Tzadikim, the Ibur is an extra month. Now, I want you to understand that there's two concepts of Ibur by a neshama. There's the Ibur of the Guf, especially the physical pregnancy, and then there's also the Ibur of the neshama. The Ibur of the neshama is all different types. We learned about it in Samach Vav, 7 months, 9 months, 12 months. By neshama chadash, it's 24 months. This, Pashat means the Ibur of the Guf. It takes Pashat a longer pregnancy, 10 months. Baal Shem Tov was born Chayalu, and his parents named him Yisrael. And it says in the Sichas, why were they given the name Yisrael? Because in the time of the Baal Shem Tov, the world was in a matter of his alphas, the whole world was in a state of faint. And when a person is in a matter of his alphas, there's different aitzes, different things you can do to bring the person out of the faint. And if I may use my own words, one is to strengthen the guf, and the other is to reach out to the neshama. The way you would strengthen the guf is by giving them a smelling salt, a very strong smell, which sort of shocks their body back into consciousness. And when you want to strengthen the neshama, you whisper their name into their ear. When you whisper a person's name, the name has to do with emek nefesh, and it's mamshech tzirik, the helam of the nefesh, into a state of gili. The Rebbe tells a story by the Friedrich Rebbe. There was a woman who was very ill, and she was in a coma. And they came to the Friedrich Rebbe, and they told the Rebbe about it. The Friedrich Rebbe said to go to that woman and whisper into her ear the Rebbe's name, the Rebbe's name. And they did it, and she came out of her coma. So the Rebbe once explained, that when a person's neshama is in a state of helam, by calling their name, you're revealing it. But sometimes the helam is so deep, it doesn't even help calling their name. You have to call the shredish of that name, which is the Nasi Ador, because all the neshamas of Ador come from the Nasi Ador, Rish B'nei Yisrael. So the Baal Shem Tov was called Yisrael, because the world was in a matter of his houses. The Jewish world was in a condition of faint. And the Jews need to be revived from their faint. And the way you revive a Jew from a faint is by calling him by his name. And the name of Yidden is Yisrael. So the Baal Shem Tov's presence in this world just his being in the physical world, was calling to every Yid by the name Yisroel. The Baal Shem Tov was a wunderkind. And this is not stam as a very well advanced. In this Rishima from the Friedrich Rebbe that I mentioned, which he copied os ba'os from Hayashishmi Dabra Misl, who copied it os ba'os from Ksav Yad Kotcher, the Alter Rebbe himself. It says that the Baal Shem Tov at the age of 3 months, could talk and walk. This is biologically impossible, scientifically cannot be. If you understand the nature of a human baby, human babies have very, very big brains, much bigger than any other animal. And as a result, that's why we're born with a soft spot. And why a human baby is born with a soft skull? Animals are not born that way. It's because the brain is still growing by pashtus. So if the skull was hard, there'd be no room. The brain continues to grow. For the first 6 months of a child's life, they are, in a way, still growing as most babies grow in the womb. That's why human babies are the least developed. They're completely helpless at birth. Because, in other words, biologically, a child till 6 months old is literally developing their brain mass. And consequently, their ability to use their nerves and, you know, 3 months to walk and talk is b'chlal na b'derech ha'teva, b'chlal na b'derech ha'teva. And his whole childhood was that way. Of course, he was raised by his father, who was a big tzaddik, and a member of the Zikim Nistadim, which we'll get to later on. The unfortunate truth of the matter was that his parents passed away when he was very, very little. How old was the Baal Shem Tov when his father passed away? He was certainly not any older than five. Conceivably, he was much younger than five. It's hard to know exactly, because it's hard to figure out the years, but the Baal Shem Tov was very little when his father passed away. 3, 4, 5 episodes, as they say in Yeshivish. And before his father passed away, his father called him to his bedside, and his father told him a tzava, an oral will, bal peh. And the will consisted of 2 lines. This is very, very famous. He said to him, Yisraelik, das nishmer av kein zach, nor far an ebisht na lein, und du sollst lieb haben, jede jeden mit der ganzen Tiefe nicht von deiner Schaum. You should be afraid of nothing and nowhere except for ebisht himself, and you should love every Jew with all the depths of your soul. So the Friedrich Rebbe has a sicha, where he tells the story and observes that in these 2 statements, you have the whole chassidus. In other words, what the Baal Shem Tov's father told him really was the most distilled version of kol chassidus kula, because chassidus has 2 principles, achdus Hashem and the incredible preciousness of ayid. So fearing nothing except for God is achdus Hashem, and loving every Jew with all depth of his soul is avas Yisrael. So the Baal Shem Tov really got from his father everything that he would teach his whole life as a child. Baal Shem Tov was pure and sincere in an indescribable way. He was almost like a neshama without a guf. Remember, he came into this world not with the regular halom is vestated. His neshama was pashut, revealed in his guf, even at that early age, unbelievably sensitive. So he took his father's words incredibly literally. And it's described how his mother used to schlep him fartok to say kaddish for his father. She was an old lady. She was in her 90s. And as soon as he finished saying Kaddish for his father, his mother passed away. And he was saying Kaddish for his mother. And of course, in those days, in the Shtetlach, there were unfortunately many orphans.
When he was 5, he was saying Kaddish for his?
I don't know exactly when his father passed away, but let's say he was 5. So as soon as he finished saying Kaddish for his father, he was saying Kaddish for his mother. In those days, in every shtetl, there was orphans. Life was very, very hard. After Tachvatat, it took them 50 years, there were people who got married very late, and the children born, you know, people who were in their senior years, second marriages, and all kinds of strange arrangements. And the consequence of this was that there were many, many children who were parentless, and then there were many people who couldn't afford to take care of their kids. So the community took care of these children. And the community was terribly impoverished itself. Not exactly like Klus was like this multi-million-dollar city, it was a shtetl. But they took care of the Yosemim to the best of their limited abilities. People gave tzedakah, they had to give them a house to live in, give them a bed to sleep in, to give them clothing and blankets. And I don't know if they had a Yiddish imamah coming in to kiss them at night and say Krishna with them, but they made sure that they didn't die, basically. They sent them to cheder, but it wasn't exactly a regular life. And a neshama like the Baal Shem Tov, a person who was so unbelievably sensitive, living amongst regular people in a hard world, he pushed it, couldn't take it. The Baal Shem Tov absolutely hated his childhood. In other words, once his parents passed away and he was living with regular people, people's backstabbing and people's gossiping and people's jealousy and people's vengeance. He just couldn't handle it. Even amongst children. I mean, children don't know enough to be subtle about these things. And the Baal Shem Tov Pashut could not deal with it. So he would run away. Imagine a kid 5, 6 years old would disappear, not for an hour or two, for days at a time. The first time he disappeared, you understand what happened. The whole city was mobilized to go look for the lost child. They went into the forest. Gizuchtahin, gizuchtahed. They probably started to say in Kaddish for him. 2 days later, he shows up in town. Perfectly calm and collected. Not a worry in the world. No hysteria. And the people gather around him and they say to this little boy, you know, we've been looking for you. We sent out the police. Where were you? He said, I was in the forest. He says, what did you eat? I found the berries. Drank water from a brook. Where did he sleep? He slept on the forest floor. He says, you weren't afraid? Me, afraid? And my father told me before he passed away, I should fear nothing except for the Eibishter himself. Was literally how he lived his life. B'pashtus. So the Baal Shem Tov began to be viewed as a strange person, as a character to be feared. Then parents told their children, stay away from him. He's either half-baked or baked a time and a half. And there's a story which is brought that Baal Shem Tov once took a bunch of children on a hike into the forest as a child, and they came across a big bad wolf. And let me tell you something, a big bad wolf in a forest is a lot bigger and a lot badder than a big bad wolf that you'll see behind the cage in a zoo. And the kids went into a panic, and the Baal Shem Tov didn't understand what they were so afraid of. And he said to them, my father told me before he passed away, you should fear nothing to the Eibishter himself. Why should you be afraid of the wolf? But the Baal Shem Tov, this was Pashut. So when this happened, so the Baal Shem Tov was ostracized. A little boy was considered crazy. And I suppose in those days they didn't have a lot of tact. And the Baal Shem Tov knew this is how he was perceived. And it was very difficult for him. Very, very difficult. They sent him to Cheder, and Kvayach, he had no Hatzlacha. The whole thing was a disaster. How long this went on is also unclear. 2 years, 3 years, less, more, I don't know what it is. But the Hemshech HaSipur is as follows. But let me just tell you one more story. On one of these sojourns into the forest, one of these trips away from town where there was no people, and no lechilas, no lashon hara, no jealousy, and no vengeance, Shem was walking in the forest, and he came across an estate, a palatial estate, a big, gigantic estate. He had been many times before in that space where he was. He never saw the palace before. So he enters into this palace, and he sees Yidden, from a Yidden, with greiser bed, shene kreisel tepayalach, lichtike penim. And the Baal Shem Tov is greeted very warmly by these kids who are playing outside in the front of this palace. And they bring him inside, and everyone is so happy to see him. And then he meets the adults, until he comes into the very center of the palace. And he's thinking to himself, how could it be that I missed so many Yidden living together, b'sholom, b'shalva, b'simcha? They looked so holy and so wonderful. How come I never saw it before? Until he meets the zakan, the sage in this group. And the sage says to Hilke Baal Shem Tov, Yingele, Zog, Ozav, Avayes, Oretz. Little boy, say that the Eibishter has abandoned the earth. This whole event was a mirage. It was an achizah seinayim. It wasn't real. And this was, as they say in Yiddish, the nitkute, was Keich of Klipa, who was hoping to destroy the Baal Shem Tov before he would have a chance to become the Baal Shem Tov. So he says to him, little boy, say the Eibishter abandoned the earth, which is exactly the opposite of what Chassidus teaches. So the Baal Shem Tov screamed out, Yispor b'kopei le'yovim. All doers of evil should scatter. And in a second, the Baal Shem Tov found himself standing in the forest, and everything was gone. The palace and the people and the payalach with the lichtike penim, all thing was gone. The Baal Shem Tov did the right thing as a little boy. On one of his sojourns into the forest, he walked deep into the forest and he heard noise. And of course, since the Baal Shem Tov was fearless, and he literally was fearless, he went in the direction of the sound. And he came across a yidant in the middle of the forest, standing by a tree, Talsam Tum, and davening with Tishtapchas HaNefesh, davening like a tzaddik. Now this the Baal Shem Tov related to, because this was how he saw his father daven. And the Baal Shem Tov realized that this is a special man, that Tzadik Nistin. So he sat down behind a tree so this person shouldn't see him. And he listened to him daven. Took hours for him to daven. When he finished davening, this Yid sat down on a tree trunk and took out a Gemara, Yidum. He had a shiur, he learned whatever his shiurim were. And after he finished learning, he took off his talis and tefillin, took out mamsha, a hard piece of bread. He went down to the river at Chagavashin. He washed for bread. He ate his bread by dunking it into the water. He ate his meal, which was kamkama meal. He benched. He put everything back into his little sack, his torbe, his little satchel he carried over his shoulder. He girdled his waist, and he got up to go. As soon as he was about to leave, the Heilige Baal Shem Tov comes out from behind his tree, and he goes over to this stranger and tells him, Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Yid. This Tzadik Nistin was very startled, because he figured that he was discovered. He was afraid initially that someone had followed him from the nearest city, and that they discovered that he was a Tzadik Nistin, so he was very disappointed. But then he started to talk to the little boy, and he realized that no, he wasn't followed from the previous city. This is Pasha, the child from someplace else, from a different place. So he says to the little boy, what are you doing here? He says, I like the forest. He says, why do you like the forest? In the forest there's no rechilis, in the forest there's no lashon hara, in the forest there's no kinin, in the forest there's no sinne. It's the Eibishter's world. So I like the forest. And the man says to him, from which city do you come? So he tells him, Sehr Plust. Wie heißt dein Tate? What's your father's name? My father heißt Rebbe Eliezer. So this Nista says, I knew your father. Because his father also was a Nista. Kum lomer lenin. Let's learn. And in the story it says, they took out of Gemara Pesachim, they stayed in the Maisa. This is from the Gnir Zachar also, I think. I think, maybe not Nigid, but they took a Marp Sachem. And they sat down on a log, they learned a Meshach Man. And apparently this person realized Medemon Hatzatan, so he says to the Baal Shem Tov, if you wish, you can come with me. If you want, you can come with me. And if you don't want, you can go home. I'm just asking you that if you go home, you shouldn't repeat to anybody what you saw. To the Baal Shem Tov, the happiest words he ever heard in his entire life were those words. If you wish, you can come with me. Baal Shem Tov was so desperate to get away from the town because he was so unhappy. He was so misunderstood. And he you know, as a Rebbe, Baal Shem Tov's whole inyan was Sefer Trog and Yenem's Mishigas. But as a child, the sensitivity of the Baal Shem Tov, Pasha did not allow him to live amongst people who were not as sensitive as he. And it was very difficult for him. And he was, you know, where do I sign? He joined with this Tzadik Nistin. And he told him, Vimidav Sechfirin, he has to behave like a schnudder, like a beggar. Nobody's allowed to know. But when we're alone, I'll teach you. And that's what happened. They traveled for 6 months from place to place. Wherever they came, they slept in a base medrash. And they collected alms. Most of the money they didn't even use for themselves. It went for Pidyon Shvuyim. And when they were alone, they would learn. And for Shteitzach, they had their moments where people would make fun of them and throw rocks at them. Part of being a schnudder was that you were a butt of people's jokes and so forth. And Baal Shem Tov learned the life of a Tzadik Nistin. But he also learned that Tzadikim Nistin were not just isolated people who were just living this pious life in isolation. He learned that there's a network, there's a whole group. And periodically they would meet other Tzadikim Nistin, they would come to certain places where there would be whole meetings of Tzadikim Nistin, because there was a leader, and there was a vision, and there was a purpose, and the wandering Tzadikim Nistin had a deeper and a higher kavana. After 6 months, he brought him to the home of an oven maker. Mir Dachzach, it says the man's name, but I don't remember it. An oven maker was a very good profession for a Tzadik Nistin. If you want to be a Tzadik Nistin, start making ovens. But the problem is today they don't make ovens like they made in the old days. Ovens were made from clay, which meant to say that an oven maker needed a lot of mud. So as a practical matter, oven makers live near swamps. In other words, where people, nobody wants to live near a swamp because it's perpetually wet and muddy. So an oven maker, by profession, lived away from everybody else. No one saw it as strange that a person who made a living collecting clay lived where nobody wanted to live because he lived where the clay was. But it was a perfect cover for a Tzadik Nistin because nobody went there. So this man's home was, for lack of words, it was a strong house. Tzadikim Nistin were constantly coming and going. Some came and gave money, dropped off money. Some came and picked the money up. Some came and left messages. Other people came and collected the messages. And the Baal Shem Tov was left in the home of this tzaddik nister, and he stayed there until bar mitzvah. And this man was mechanech the chiluk Baal Shem Tov. He taught him Tehillim. I mean, the Baal Shem Tov, you know what I'm saying, it's not like a regular person, you know. 20 years to finish Shas. Tried 20 days. I mean, it's an undersut Bashafan Shingans. And the Baal Shem Tov lived in this man's home until bar mitzvah, and he got a very close-up perception of the world of the tzaddikim nistarim. And they have a leader. And his name is Rav Adam Baal Shem. And Rav Adam Baal Shem organized the tzaddikim nistarim. And they were going on these different missions, mostly for pidyon shvuyim. Yidden were very poor. As you'll see later on in the story, Yidden had a lot of tzaddis. And the tzaddikim, and oftentimes they couldn't pay their debts. And you couldn't pay your debts. So they threw you into a pit, you, your wife, and your children, until whatever happened, happened. And the tzaddikim nistarim would wander around. They would find where Yid was Nebuch in a boy, they would compost it with money and redeem him. But as you see later on in the story, it was very, very apathetic, very helpless, because as many people as you helped, there were more people going. It was a never-ending cycle of poverty and pidyon shvuyim, which was going no place. It didn't seem to show any relief, any possibility of redeeming itself, of healing itself. It just was a cycle of poverty and tzaddis. And the Baal Shem Tov wanted to become a member of the tzaddikim nistarim, but there was a strict policy that allowed nobody under bar mitzvah to be a member of the group. So the Baal Shem Tov Pashat waited desperately for his bar mitzvah that he could become a nister, a tzaddik nister. Bar mitzvah, of course, was the very end of Tafayin Aleph. Chayal Tafayin Baal Shem Tov turned 13. So his 14th year was Tafayin Beis. And this year, of course, is exactly 300 years since then. And people have said that Taf Shin, Ayin Beis, is Shnas Tavay Alav Brach. Now, I'm not into the Rosh Tevesen. You know, the ones that the Rebbe gave us, I'm not into the creating new ones. But this one you don't have to create, because the Baal Shem Tov said, the Friedekeber writes in the Sikh, that then, Talmidei Baal Shem Tov, Chaveri Baal Shem Tov, the Tzaddik in the Stodim, used to say that Tove, Ayin Beis, Shnas, Tove, Yolov, Bracha. I heard from the Rebbe in the Fabring. So if Shnas, Tov, Ayin Beis, is Tove, Yolov, Bracha, Tov, Shin, Ayin Beis, to be Shnas, Tove, Yolov, Bracha, is not at all such a ridiculous conjecture, such a ridiculous carrying over. And there's a reason why Tafayim Beis was considered Shnas Tavi Alav Bracha, and I'll continue Mr. Shaman on another occasion.